Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Jen from Pennsylvania. Welcome, Jen.
Hi, Michael.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm a little nervous, but also really excited to be able to be here. So how are
great.
You doing this evening?
Great. It's great to have you on the air with us. Jen, I understand you were a participant via Skype in the workshop this past Saturday.
I was. It was a very exciting opportunity. I hope the first of many more to come. It was so great. I was thinking about this a little bit today, that I often have the experience of, you know, going to the Living Compassion website and seeing all the great things on the schedule. And because I live on the East Coast, you know, especially for a one-day workshop, there's often these great things that I'd love to participate in, but, you know, not really possible to fly to California, especially for a day. So it was so much fun to be able to know that there was Sherry and all these folks in Palo Alto, and I was able to participate and really be, you know, as fully there as if I had been in the room.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. Yeah, it's our first experience doing that. And so you're there with your computer.
Yeah.
And for people who are not familiar with Skype, maybe you could talk a little bit about the nuts and bolts and then what your experience was.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not too daunting. I would encourage anybody who's concerned, and I think there's some support available too if you have questions or need some support through Living Compassion. But I just needed to purchase a pretty cheap little headphone that had a microphone and a speaker that was able to plug into my computer and have that ready to go. Just download a program which is free on the computer called Skype. That's really nice. It just kind of walks you through exactly what you need to do to be able to be on that. And then you get a little ID that's going to be your ID, and I just needed to send that into Living Compassion. And that was part of the instructions for signing up for the workshop. And then we received some great instructions from everyone getting things coordinated about how to get set that day and be able to call in and be ready to go so that we could be heard and be able to participate that day.
That's really exciting. You know, it reminds me a little bit of what we're doing right now.
Yes, absolutely. It's
so you're
amazing.
In Pennsylvania, and I'm in California, and we're doing awareness practice.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, that and also like the reflective listening buddies that always amazes me in a similar way that, you know, people can be all over the country, all over the world, and be able to be connected through these technologies and be able to do practice together. So, yeah.
Yes, it is really great. Yes, my experience, definitely. So the workshop started, and I'm guessing at various points, Sherry, there was discussion and exercises, and you would be listening, and there would be opportunities for you to participate as well?
Yes, absolutely. There were. We were able to go ahead and email in if we wanted to participate, and then one of the monks who was there would kind of, I suspect, give Sherry the high sign or something to let people know that there were some folks on Skype that wanted to participate, and then we were able to be called on and be heard just like we had made gusto in the group and be able to participate in that way. So it was pretty amazing. And, you know, of course, I don't know all of the details, but it seemed like there was an awful lot of work that had to happen for the monastery to be able to make this possible. But gosh, I was just so incredibly grateful that, you know, all that work was done to make this possible, because it was an amazing feeling of connection and sangha. You know, again, even though here I was in my little house in Pennsylvania while this was all going on in Palo Alto, it was just like I got to be there, and I felt so much gratitude. You know, I got to do the guided imageries and participate and have insights and get to really practice with everyone, even from this distance.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. And I think there was indeed, as you mentioned, a lot of work that went on behind the scenes to make it all possible. And to me, that's one of the things that I really like about this new direction, is there's a real effort and commitment to make practice available to anyone, anywhere.
Yeah, and again, I'm just feeling so much gratitude for that. You know, absolutely, like you said, the new direction and just all the things that I suspect, again, are taking, you know, a great deal of work on the part of the monastery, and really, I guess, on the part of all of us. We're all being asked to pitch in as much as possible. But boy, it feels so worth it, you know, to be able to have these opportunities to connect and to practice. And I, you know, I can feel as I've gone through this week now after being here in my home and having a workshop all day Saturday from my home, you know, I really feel the effects of that deeper practice opportunity carrying through into my day-to-day life and my week. And that's just, it's just such a gift. So I feel really grateful that this is happening and encourage everyone to participate as much as they're able to in all of these great new offerings.
Yes, it is really wonderful. And I have the same experience as well after a day-long workshop like that, where something is really opened up or released or I've let go of something. And those effects, they last. They carry on. They carry into my daily life. And in that way, I can see the benefits of practice.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that's so exciting about being able to do like a Skype workshop, because, you know, there are a lot of ways to participate from a distance. But still, you know, if you can't get to a retreat that often or whatever, you know, because especially of a distance issue, if you're able to participate in something like a workshop like this, it's just that amazing. It feels like kind of a boost that we can all give each other by getting together in that way in the privileged environment, all supporting each other for a whole day. You know, it feels like such a way to support each other and continuing to really pay attention.
Yes, it is really wonderful. That kind of real-time experience, knowing that everyone's there, participating from wherever they are. To me, it's similar to being here on the radio show, and I can scroll down and see all these people listening and everybody waiting to call in, and there's a real sense of sangha and willingness to be here to assist each other in waking up.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, too, there was kind of an element, like I you know, I knew that all these people were doing work so that this could happen, and that helped me to show up a little bit more fully, too, because I kind of was noticing, you know, being able to do this from my home, there was a lot of temptation for conditioning. You know, there could have been a lot of distraction. I guess it would be easy to, you know, try to plug in the speaker and go do the dishes or do something that might be a temptation to do at home because, you know, I wasn't physically in the workshop. So, you know, those things kind of came up and I got to really see them. And then I knew, you know, there's a whole group of people sitting there in Palo Alto and all these people that made it possible for me to be here. And I want to be, you know, as present as I can to give and receive and participate. So I really took some time to kind of notice that, and I ended up setting up my computer in a place in the house that didn't have any, you know, kind of distracting stuff that might have, you know, taken my attention, and got a cup of tea and lit a candle and, you know, just really tried to be conscious of wanting to be there as present as possible, you know, as we do with everything in practice, but something about also being connected to the larger Sangha doing that too really supported me, and I'm seeing that coming through in my week as well.
That's really wonderful. I can see in what you're describing that you found that extra willingness to know that you need to set up your environment in your home in a particular way to be able to support you to be present to it.
Yeah, absolutely. That, you know, that alone was a wonderful awareness to be able to take from the workshop and be practicing with now. And actually something that I tried to practice with this evening too, being a little bit nervous about talking on the show. So doing the same thing, you know, not letting conditioning come in and take the opportunity to participate away, just doing everything I could to be present. And I feel like that's what's offered when Sherry offers these things and we come together as a Sangha and we all participate. That's what we get a chance to practice and remember and support with one another.
Yes, and so that's the gift that you bring to all of us tonight. Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Jen, thank you so much for joining us. It's been great.
Well, thank you very much. Have a wonderful show, and I hope that people will get to participate in lots of Skype workshops. So.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
Good. That was fun.
It was fun.
Yeah. Hey, someone, a lovely person in the Sangha, sent something in to us. It's and I can't, it was a comedian being interviewed And I don't know who he was, but the thing was called Everything is Amazing and We're Unhappy, something like that.
Yes.
Everything's Amazing and We're Unhappy. And I watched it this afternoon right before the show and right before listening to you and Jen. And it was such a perfect fit. I would really encourage anybody who's likes to go on YouTube and check these things out to do it, because the point that he's making is how quickly we become accustomed to life as it is right now. One of the examples he gave was, somebody opens up their cell phone and goes, well, it's not working. And he says, the signal is coming. You're connecting with outer space. Could you give it a second to make that journey? And it's fun to think about, as you two were talking, all of the things that we're able to do now that such a short time ago just absolutely were not available to us.
Yeah.
So there's the connection of Sangha and being able to do workshops together and that sort of thing. And then there's the work that we do in Africa. What we're doing there would have not been possible just a short time ago, because we're able to go back and forth periodically and yet stay in touch with people through computers and, digital cameras that send back photographs and emails and Skype and all of that sort of thing. It's just really, as I'm fond of saying, it's a wonderful time to be alive.
Yes.
May we never lose sight of the miracle.
Yes. Yes. The technology is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see what you're pointing at in that conditioning holds on to this ideal about how things are, actually just makes it up out of thin air. And anything that deviates from that is a problem.
Yes. Forgetting that, again, just a very short time ago, this thing that is frustrating me was not even possible. As he said, you complain, and Sister Phil used to, she's the first one I ever heard say this, people get off, they fly to New York, they get off the plane, and they grouse that it's 20 minutes late.
Yeah.
They did something that is so astounding. It would have taken years and years to do that not that long ago. And yet now we're so used to it that if it's 20 minutes late, we're just terribly, terribly inconvenienced.
Yeah.
And, of course, conditioning is inconvenienced by everything. So, and sadly, we often let it assess our lives so we can get confused about that sort of thing.
Yes, indeed. Sherry, we have many callers here.
Good. Let's talk to them.
Yay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Emily calling from the Grand Canyon.
Calling from
Hello?
The Grand Canyon.
Yes.
That's
amazing. That's where I live.
Are you on top of it or down at the bottom of it or part way, or how are you doing that?
I'm on top of it.
Oh, good. I don't know. The technology might be such that you could be calling, but probably not. Not without sat phone.
You have to have a landline phone. Yeah, to call
uh-huh.
on there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, what's going on in the world of the Grand Canyon?
Well, a lot of things. I was calling in particular to talk about, I've been really stuck in this content for like the last several months, and I just feel like I'm caught in a loop. So, I don't know, I was thinking maybe I could get some ideas of how to drop out of it.
Yeah, we might find the exit off of that.
Yes.
I've
found a lot of exits, and I've somehow, obviously, come back into the story.
Uh-huh.
The content kind of revolves around what feels like a toxic relationship I have with someone like was my ex-boyfriend, and then we tried being friends and all that stuff. And I have jumped back and forth between judging him and accepting him and wanting to be with him, not wanting to be with him, and all
liking
this
liking him, not liking him, thinking he's the one, knowing he's not the one.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
and also he's very dependent on me, and so that involved with that is just is a lot. So
yeah, and so there's also the duality of I want somebody to be dependent on me. I really don't want someone to.
Yeah. I'm really getting that too. And but anyway, so I did take a break from talking with him, like not seeing him at all, and that really helped because I could see all the stories clearly how they had to do with me and not him when I separated myself from him. But
you.
then I fell back into conditioning and started talking to him again, and then I was like, wow, I really don't want this. You know, why did I do this? And then to make it, you know, even harder and more ammo for conditioning, you know, he, like, 2 days ago sent me these text messages that he is really depressed and wants to kill himself. And I just sent him a message and said that I think he needs to talk to someone but not me. And just kind of made a line.
Yeah, good for you. And what an incredibly hard thing to do.
Yeah, it is really hard.
Oh, it really is. Because as you well know, conditioning has no, what shall we say? It has no shame. It has no...
Yeah, it really doesn't.
No, it doesn't. It'll use anything. So say the worst happened and this fellow decided to commit suicide. Conditioning would want to jump on that and have a heyday with causing you to suffer over that. There wouldn't be a single moment of allowing you to just feel sad that another human being, somebody that you have known and loved, would find their life in this place. There would be none of that. Just a quick trip to what a rotten, miserable person you are for allowing this to happen. But you could have prevented it, and you didn't.
Yeah, as if I have that much control.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I find actually what you're talking about quite encouraging. I keep going back to a quote from Joko Beck, who's a Zen master down in Southern California, who's famous, one of her famous lines, we don't let things go, we wear them out.
Yeah,
that's
true.
And that seems to me like what's going on with you. Well, conditioning would tell you that you should just see this, make a decision, that's the end of it. Of course, it's also talking you into getting involved again and then beating you up for having done it. But you're really seeing the process in that.
I think that is true. I think that... this is something conditioning has done before, like especially with my practice, is like when it gets really, when conditioning says it gets really hard, then I get that feeling like this can't go on anymore, you know, I have to do something drastic, you know.
Yes.
Or I have to make a decision.
Yes. And what people, those of us who pay attention to this kind of thing, we know that this happens with every piece of content in our lives. There is conditioning gets us engaged in that dualism. I want that. I don't want that. I should do that. I shouldn't do that. I like that. I don't like that. That's good for me. That's bad for me. So whether it's money or relationship or job or where we live or buying a car or whatever it is, it's conditioning is going to try to get us in that same back and forth two sides of a duality place because that's where suffering exists.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, it's come up, you know, so much the past 2 months, like, you have to make a decision, which is kind of funny because it's like, well, what's going to happen if I don't make a decision, you know?
Exactly. Really?
Like,
why?
What rush, you know? I don't.
Yeah. Why now?
And there's obviously, I mean, there's no right decision, so
no.
I don't know, but there's just some part that just keeps believing, wants to believe that I can find a right way to do this.
Okay,
you know?
Now, this is really subtle stuff, but you are looking at a really subtle level. I'm going to suggest to you that the one who says she believes that is also conditioning.
Okay.
That conditioning has you at a tennis match. And on this side is you need to do something about this right away. You need to do this. Then the volley, you know, then it goes over the net. Well, you know, there's a right answer. Goes back over the net. You know, you need to do something about this. Goes back over. Yeah, but if you could, there is a best way. And can you get a sense of yourself just kind of being like at a tennis match? You know, you look there when that one's talking. Then you look there when that one's talking. And because we're conditioned to believe, in this case, that's you, then you go with that one when that one's talking, that one when that one's talking.
Mm-hmm.
Can you get a sense of that?
Yeah, I mean, that imagery really helps.
Good.
Yeah.
So you're meant to believe that the one who thinks, yeah, but I think I can figure this out. There really is a right. Now, see, that's a clue right there because it's still dualistic. There is a right answer. There is a good way to be. There is the, okay? No, there isn't. That's just the other side of the duality from being the wrong person.
And you know what occurs to me, too, is I think there's another story in there, too, that how I handle this situation says something about me.
Oh, I bet you are so right. Because in conditioning's world, everything means something. And usually, as you've noticed, it's about you.
Yeah.
So even if it means something about somebody else, ultimately it means something about you. You know what I mean? So if I'm your mother, and we're out somewhere, and I say something really stupid, okay? And so that means something about who I am. But it also means something about who you are, because I'm your mother.
Yeah.
So in the world of egocentric karmic conditioning, it's always going to come back to I, because I is the center of the universe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it happening already. Like, at first it was like, oh, I know that it's going to beat me up, you know, if something happens to him or anything like that. And then, you know, like yesterday, like a voice said to me, well, that was kind of mean, you know,
I
said to him, you know.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. So either way, I lose.
Either way, you lose. And, you know, it's a really, truly horrible thing. But it's true. The greatest triumph for egocentric karmic conditioning and self-hate is if he committed suicide.
Yeah,
that's how cruel it is. Because and the thing is, it's not even about him. You know, again, because it's all about I. And so if he committed suicide, then self-hate could just turn your life into a living hell. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah, so I'm thinking maybe this is why I'm having so much trouble, you know, just letting go of him, because conditioning wants me to be in this game.
Oh, conditioning wants you in that duality. Because as you said, either way you lose. If you're in the relationship, it beats you up for being in the relationship. If you're not in the relationship, it beats you up for not being in the relationship. Yeah? And the beating up is a range. You know, it can just be saying things like, well, that was mean, or that wasn't very nice. But it's going to make that connection. But it's going to review for you all of the mean things you ever said to him. So it's your fault, whatever happens to you. It's fiendish. It really is. You know, again, I'm sometimes accused of using extreme language. But when it comes to this stuff, there isn't language that is extreme enough. It is truly, viciously hateful. And it has no place in our lives. And that's what you're closing in on. That's what you're getting to see through this. That as long as you are engaged with it, you will never, ever win. You will never even be all right. And yet when you disengage from it, when you come back to center, it is so obvious that there's nothing wrong with you. There never has been. There never will be. Everything is exactly the way it is, and it's just fine.
Yeah, and I think I want to take that energy that I'm putting into the conversation and use that energy to really just in the moment, just drop out of it and be kind to myself, you know, when I can.
Exactly. Which, by the way, is the greatest contribution you can make in life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Conditioning wants us to believe that the greatest contribution we can make is to twist ourselves in knots and live in self-hate and try to be the right person and get beaten when we're the wrong person and live in a world of guilt about what we have and haven't done. But that is not a kindness. When you're living in kindness for yourself, that makes you a kind place for everyone and everything.
Yeah. And, you know, it's really ironic, too, is that, you know, this year I really made a commitment to deepen my practice, and I really feel like I've been spending a lot of time wanting to help, like, him, and or fix him or do all this stuff that doesn't, you know.
Well, you know what? I could have actually told you that you had made that commitment to deepen your practice. This is exactly the kind of thing that happens to us when we make a commitment to deepen our practice. You know that?
What do you mean, like the outside stuff, or?
Yeah, that conditioning just ramps everything up. As soon as you're going to deepen your practice, conditioning just throws it into high gear to get everything in your path that you're going to stumble and trip over.
Yeah.
Because the result, hopefully, from conditioning's perspective, is that you'll quit. The information you'll get is, oh, boy, you know, practice is not good for me. I was doing fine till I started that awareness practice, and then, whew, life got miserable.
Yeah, and it's been using a lot of, you know, that pseudo-zen kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and it does, yeah, and it just comes back to, you know, just reminders to remember. Because when I do remember, you know, like I said, I called like a month and a half ago, and I was saying that, you know, every time I would stop practicing was when all these voices would say, this is too hard. Look at all this stuff that's happening. It's too hard. And I would forget that that was conditioning. That wasn't practice. That was conditioning.
Exactly.
And that was the hard place, and that was where the suffering was.
Yep.
And the easy, wonderful, yeah.
The suffering is always in conditioning, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. When you're remembering, when you're present, when you're practicing, when you're here, life isn't hard. Even when very painful, difficult things are happening, we get it, that it's life, and it's okay. There's nothing wrong. Always the case. And the thing that I just want to encourage you with is that what you're doing is exactly the right thing. You're having all of the experiences that a person attempting to deepen their practice runs into.
That is very encouraging.
Yeah. So, you know, I've been doing this for a while. I've been practicing for a while. And there is, at this point, pretty much nothing. I can't think of the last time, in fact, that somebody said something to me that I didn't know from my own experience. And what that means is, I went to every one of those miserable places. And I, just as you're doing, I learned to see them for what they are. I heard all the voices around it. I got all the sensations in my body. I know all the emotional reactions. I know all the karmic behaviors. I know all that stuff. I see it. I recognize it for what it is. And I know how to step clear of it. So when somebody says da-da-da-da-da-da-da to me, I don't have to panic and say, "Oh my God, you know, I don't know what to do." I don't have to stand there and wring my hands. I go to that place inside of me that they are describing, the one that they are currently going through, and the content of it may be different, but I know the process, and that's what you're doing right now. You are becoming actually a very useful human being.
Yeah, you know, this does feel very different in that I feel like even though maybe I don't want to be in this place or I feel like I shouldn't be in this loop or something, you know, it's like, but there are a lot more moments of paying attention.
Yes.
In
yes.
it and
yes.
seeing what's going on.
That's right, and that's what we're doing. We just stay there and watch and 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 stay there and watch. Even though the voices are saying you should be over this, you should be out of this, you should be, what is the matter with you? I can't believe you're doing this again. How can this be? You know, and it's just like a parallel channel running over there. But what we're doing is staying and watching until finally we've seen it all. And when we've seen it all, you know what? It goes away. It doesn't mean it won't cycle through again, because it will. But basically, you'll say to yourself, wait a minute, I know this one. And you start looking for the familiar places, and you go, oh, yeah, I know this one. Click.
Yeah.
So, again, if conditioning weren't there telling you that what you're doing is wrong, that you're making a mistake, you would just
there wouldn't be a problem.
That's right. You would just be fascinated by what you're seeing.
Yeah.
All right. Stick with it.
All right. Thank you very much, Sherry.
And check in again, huh? Let us know.
I will.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Emily. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
The Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues. Good musicians and good friends coming together to make something really beautiful simply because we can. Zen Blues Music. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice. because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life.
Please visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, that discussion was really instructive for me.
Yeah. What struck you about it?
Well, I noticed a lot of conditioning come up today, very old, and I thought about some of the things you've said about that, like, wow, do you have any new lines here? And I was really, as you've said to me many times, it's the fear and the resistance that really holds it in place.
Yeah.
So as much as possible, I was saying, bring it on,
yeah.
Bring it on.
Yeah.
And so when
yeah.
I have those experiences like today and then listen to your conversation with Emily, everything just fits into place.
Yeah.
I can see, the dualism, the tennis game, yes.
Yeah. That's what I like about that conversation. It just, as often, you know, when we talk with folks, but it was just one of those, for me, where it's so obvious that we're all exactly alike. You know, that we can diagram a very, really complex life situation like that. I mean, there's a lot going on there. But it comes down to the world of duality, conditioning, getting somebody to look at two opposing things, take it all personally, believe that there's one right way and that it all means something about it. I mean, we could just endlessly plug our individual content into that little diagram and find ourselves there.
Yes, yes. And I've heard you talk about it as diagramming sentences.
Yeah.
It's like, this is the duality. This is the taking it personally. Here comes the fear. Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Great. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Sherry, we have several more callers here.
All right.
Okay, next caller. You are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Virginia from Washington State.
Hey, Virginia.
Hi. Hi.
How are things up in the fabulous Northwest?
Pretty good. They're pretty good up here. It's kind of a dark day, but spring is coming. Spring is actually it's pretty much here. But Sherry, I found that last call pretty inspiring. From where I'm at, just the discussion about being able to see the processes so clearly that when they start again, I don't have to be fooled.
For very long. Yeah.
Right. And actually, that's kind of one of the topic I wanted to talk to you about today. I spoke with you last month and we talked about body sensations. And then I guess this month I'd like to talk about how Virginia gets distracted or how it gets stopped.
Uh-huh. And what have you noticed about that so far?
Well, let's see. What I've noticed so far is I noticed that when I was paying attention to the body sensations, everything was going along well. And then there was one that, I don't know if I had resistance to it or what, but there's a certain body sensation I get, and it gets interpreted as anxiety. And so there's a couple of different subpersonalities. One is an anxious subpersonality. And then I've noticed I think what is conditioning comes in and says, the way conditioning interacts with anxious subpersonality is it says stuff like, nothing will ever work out for you and life sucks and that kind of thing. And then another subpersonality comes in and she actually is shut down to begin with. So that kind of feeds into her, you know, gives her energy. And then it kind of just goes around.
Uh-huh. And what would happen if anxiety meant, you know, those sensations and the label anxiety meant, gosh, it's really time to relax and breathe and remind myself of all of the wonderful things in life that I experience.
Wow.
Because as Emily was saying, the difficulty is it means something.
It means something, yeah.
So
yeah.
When we were little kids and we had all that fluttering stuff in the stomach, you know, is that kind of where you feel it in their stomach?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we had that fluttering in the stomach. We usually got that when something good was going to happen. It came with excitement.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point, it got turned into fear or dread or, sort of anticipation, expectation of something bad, not
mm-hmm.
something good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so then that meaning got attached to those sensations.
Okay. Yeah. 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 It's dread. It's really dread. Trepidation. And so those meanings got attached to those sensations. Okay. And
yeah.
So when,
but
yeah.
what if the meaning that got attached to those sensations was, woo, really need to get back here and take care of Virginia.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, I see where you're going with that, Sherry. And that would just really be taking it out of the hands of conditioned mind, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And,
because, you know, interestingly enough, of course, that is what it means.
Yeah, that is what it means.
You know, it's not like, okay, well, we're going to pull a big con job on somebody here by trying to pretend that something means what it doesn't mean. Of course that's what it means.
Right.
Of course that's what it means. There's something that somebody is afraid of. There's something that has historically made Virginia afraid or caused her not to enjoy life or not to want to go forward or that sort of thing. Oh, well, my gosh. That means we need to come to the rescue here.
Right. Okay. I totally agree with you, Sherry. And I think it might take a little energy to step, you know, to get that moving, but I know I can do that. I know that's possible.
Yeah.
I do have one question for you because it seems like often the content is, well, this is what I notice happening. It's like if I go away for the weekend or a vacation or something, other sub-personalities come out and they're more fun and adventurous and stuff. But the moment I come back to this, the life that I have created, and especially my work life, just like it's immediately an energy suck.
Mm-hmm.
And
can you describe a little bit about what that's like? What do the voices say? How do they take you into that energy depleting room?
Well, I think part of it is, you know, they just say things like, we hate this, and and then they list all the reasons that they hate it. And this isn't the right place for you, and you can do something else. You know, why can't you do something else? It's another duality, I guess, you know.
Sure it is, because, of course, the obvious answer to that is, because they're calling you.
Right.
So they're not you.
Yeah.
So the answer is, it's my job. You go get your own job.
This is my job. Go and get your own job.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, we hate this. Well, don't come here. Would make everybody's life more pleasant. Why can't you do something else? Well, this is what I do. You go do something else.
Right.
You know, it never occurs to us to have that conversation with those people.
Oh, no. But, you're right.
Yeah, but, you know, if it were somebody in our actual life, an actual walking around person, many people, sooner or later, some would get there faster than others, would have exactly that response. If somebody came in every day to your workplace and said, why do you do this? Why didn't you go somewhere else? Why didn't you do something else? After a while, I think it would occur to you to say, what business is it of yours?
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So there's that aspect to it. They don't have to be happy with what you do. And, you know, of course, at this point, there's kind of a funny little thing that goes along with that, which I've heard actually from a number of people. In fact, mm-hmm. I just got an email from a woman who said, you know, if I start getting cranky at work the way I used to, I just stop and remind myself, I'm really lucky I have a job.
Yeah.
I might spend a little time saying thank you that there's somebody who's willing to give me a paycheck every week.
Right.
Yeah?
Right. This could be that I'm still identified, so I'm just going to throw it out there just to get it all out on the table.
Absolutely.
I think a part of me would like another job, and I see that would never happen as long as I'm stuck in this, I hate this mode.
Oh, precisely. I hate this is not designed to get you a better job.
Right.
It's designed to make you miserable where you are.
Right.
Uh-huh.
It's one process. Yeah.
One process doesn't lead to another. If you went and got another job, in a very short period of time, they'd all be right there with the same story.
Okay.
And that doesn't mean you should stay in that job.
Right.
It's separating those two things out. You can go to work anywhere you want to go to work. Your job is to be happy.
Okay.
Whatever you're doing.
Okay.
And conditioning will interpret that as, well, Sherry said you should stay in a job you hate and learn to be happy there.
Right.
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is you learn wherever you are not to be in the clutches of conditioning, and you will be happy where you are, and you're right. When that happens, you'll be freed up to go anywhere and do anything.
There's a very subtle difference there. But I think I hear what you're saying, and I'm just, part of me is really excited, Sherry. It's fascinating because part of me is like, we just want to fix Virginia and move on. And then there's another part that's like, we really want to see all the tiny little micro steps that go into this.
Yeah.
It is fascinating.
It is fascinating. This is a human being we're talking about.
Yeah.
It is completely fascinating.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul.
And again, there is, as far as I'm concerned, no greater task for us, no greater gift that we can give than to end the suffering of the one human being whose life experience we know most intimately.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you can imagine if we could... You know, around our country, forget the rest of the globe. We don't know what they're doing. They may be fine. We don't know. But we hear a lot about what's going on with our folk.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can imagine, we had a magic wand, and 50% of the people in our country suddenly were freed from egocentric karmic conditioning
mm-hmm.
and self-hatred.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine? What a different country we would live in.
Oh, my gosh. It's hard to imagine.
I just don't think there would be children without health care.
Right, yeah.
I don't think people would be living in slums and squalor and children starving to death. And I just don't think it would happen. I don't think we would have 25% of the people around the globe who are incarcerated living in our prisons. I don't think that would be going on.
We would be seeing life from a different place.
Completely different place. So we can't wave a magic wand and get 50% of the people there, but we can take responsibility for doing the best we can to get one person there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Ourselves,
yep. Yep. And just one other thing that kind of fits in here, Sherry, is just to also put it out, is I know that when I hang up this phone, there will be repercussions, and that's going to be one of the things I want to also start to really look at that, see what, I want to really pay close attention to see how that happens too.
You want to pay close attention to see how it happens. You want to pay close attention to the process.
Mm-hmm.
You do not want to pay any attention at all to the content.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean by that?
In other words, say I hang up the phone and I won't go out to a bar and have a, you know, whatever, several drinks or whatever.
That's right. And you won't also get involved in the conversation that's going on in your head. You can notice that there's a conversation there designed to pull you into distraction or self-hatred.
Yes.
You can notice that, but you don't want to take notes on what that voice is saying.
Okay.
You know, in the sense that pretty soon, 2 minutes into it, you're so involved in the conversation that you're believing it.
Okay. So when the voice comes in and says, okay, go to the refrigerator now and eat a bunch of food so you can stuff down all the, you know, energy that just came up. The idea is...
And so there's a clue for you.
Yeah.
And so that would be a great time to sit down to do the two-chair exercise, you know, the part of you who would have that happen to her. And you can sit with her and say, you know, what? How would you like it to be right now? What would really take care of you right now?
Okay, yeah.
And then do the switchy-switchy and talk to each other, and you mentor her through that, and then the next thing will come up. You know, well, why don't you, and you'll recognize that as a voice because it's calling you you. Right, which is a big clue there. Why don't you, whatever it is, and you do the same process. Again, it becomes a flag for you to pay attention. So every time that kind of voice comes in, trying to talk you into distraction, into self-hatred and that sort of thing, it reminds you, oh, I need to take care of Virginia. Aha! A call from Virginia.
Yeah.
I need to go to the rescue. And you do the kinds of things that you know to do to come back to yourself, to take care of yourself.
Yeah. Thank you so
very
much.
Very good.
This has been very helpful. Thank you. And thank you, Michael. Thanks for offering the show. It's a terrific service. Really appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate it, too, so thank you.
Yep. Talk to you next month.
All right. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Virginia. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to take a sponsor break here, and we'll be right back.
All right.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Open it with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have three more callers here. Sherry, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Oh, sorry.
No problem.
You couldn't hear me for a minute?
I couldn't hear you for a second.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Okay, sorry about that. I'll speak up.
No problem. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Todd calling from Canada.
Hey, Hi. Todd.
Hi, guys.
Calgary.
Calgary, thank you. Remembered, yeah. Calgary. It was Vancouver
Calgary.
For a while, but now it's Calgary.
I know. I was just so convinced, just proving how certain a person can be in their wrongness.
Oh,
what's
that's
going
so
on?
True. Well, I'm phoning for the adrenaline rush because I have those sensations.
Uh-huh.
Conditioning is creating fear and resistance, so I have to face that, and calling in is a great way to see that it can't tell me not what to do,
uh-huh,
which it has for so long, and now facing it, it's really fun to go against it.
It really
so,
is, isn't it?
it is fun because the sensations, what I love, I was listening to the archives the other day, and you said one of the callers was talking about sensations, and that's just, I get these wicked, wicked sensations, which previous to practice, I would suppress with addictions because I just could not stand them. And now after practice, I just be with them.
Yeah.
And I loved your encouragement just recently saying, celebrate, you're a human, you're a sentient being.
Yeah.
You're feeling.
Yeah.
And that gives me such solace when it comes up that it's like, wow, I'm a human being.
Yes, yeah.
I have sensations, and they don't mean anything.
That's right.
But you can
enjoy them.
You can enjoy them.
Yeah.
So heavily conditioned, as you guided and pointed that, as a small child, I was so heavily conditioned not to feel and not to express emotion because it must have terrified my mother beyond belief, because the minute I would even, like, scrunch up an eye, like maybe an eyebrow, I was reprimanded immediately.
Yeah.
So just such great.
So you really have a good, clear picture of how she was raised.
Yes, very clear picture. And
yeah.
She would often talk to me about her anxiety, which I didn't have any awareness of till this practice. She's since passed on. But I wish she were alive today. I'd love to bring practice to a relationship we never had. But she talked so incessantly about the snakes in her stomach.
Mm-hmm.
I had these snakes in my stomach. These snakes, my skin is crawling. And, of course, I couldn't be much comfort for her because I didn't have my own awareness to relate. And I couldn't really reassure her, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So
she
suffered immensely.
I often encourage people to lighten up on their parents because my generation was really kind of the first one. Those of us, who grew up in the '60s, were the first ones to have any kind of open opportunity to explore all of this stuff. And even after that, it was a lot of years that people, had to sneak into a therapist's office and sneak out another door for fear somebody would know and that sort of thing. So all of this ability to talk about what goes on with us and seek help and guidance and counseling and all that thing, it just didn't exist for a lot of folks. And
It didn't.
Yeah, so they were really trapped on their own with all, and plus, I suspect a lot of child rearing was worse. With the idea of what you have to do to a child to turn him or her into an acceptable member of society. So, really rugged.
Well, what this practice has allowed me to bring is such. Both my parents have since died, but it's brought so much closure and compassion and understanding of how, I struggled for so many years as a victim of this abusive childhood, which I would recount. But since this practice, I just see it in such a new light. And you're right, lighten up on the parents. I come to such a place of forgiveness and understanding and compassion and empathy that the struggles they went through with no tools, no awareness, no reassurance, no mentors, no support.
Yep,
and I have all the support.
Yeah,
that I
and use. We still struggle.
Oh, this is the thing. With all the support, I still get in that dark room so often. My mom and dad lived in constantly, which had no awareness of it, and they had no even chance to escape it for a blip.
Yeah, the only thing that was offered to people was you should be different.
Yes, you should be different.
No, which is just not a good roadmap.
Not a good roadmap at all. So it's great to be able to bring that awareness to our relationships and even ones that are not constantly with us, but ones that are, your parents, that's a relationship that is so unique. So unique. Even when your parents aren't present in your life, it's still unique.
Yeah. One of my favorite...
Kind of
go ahead. Sure?
I was just thinking it's still omnipresent even though they're not physically in my life.
Yeah.
It just isn't. Conditioning, of course, loves to use those relationships against you, but also center and heart and compassion also likes to look at those relationships too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's both sides, and it's interesting to see the processes. But you were going to say?
Oh, just one of my favorite expressions is that in the present, we can undo the past and release the future.
Yes, there's nothing wrong with your book.
Yeah, that's a great, a gift that our families have given us, even if
right.
the relationships were very, very difficult, because
yes.
it's our transformation that's going to make a difference for us.
Yeah,
so.
And that's my experience.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you, I know there's some other callers, my condition is always screaming at me that I have to hurry up and get off the line because A, I don't have anything important to say, and B, there's more, you know, anyway.
There are all those
so
people
I'm always rushed.
Up.
Yeah, there's
yeah.
people lined up, so there's an urgency. My condition is always making me, A, talk quickly, and B, end things before I'm really finished,
uh-huh.
which is a neat thing to see.
It's a good
but
thing
when
to
I'm
see.
Looking, it is a good thing to see. What I'm looking at is I'm working through the How You Do Anything is How You Do Everything workbook.
Uh-huh.
And it's a lot of fun. I do a page a day, sort of part of my awareness practice.
Uh-huh.
It's really, really fun. It's really fun to see who, you know, kind of shows up to do the workbook. But I'm kind of looking to condition mind for clarity, so I have confusion.
Uh-huh.
But I'm kind of stuck on the, if I could here, double reverse projection. I'm on that exercise.
Uh-huh.
And it's about expectations. There's a page before it says, what do other people expect from you? And I did this list of all these expectations that I feel others expect of me.
Uh-huh.
And then the pointing on the next page is, this is what we call double reverse projection.
Uh-huh.
And it goes, I project onto you what I think about myself, and then I think you think it about me.
Yes.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And can you see how that happens?
I've got so much conditioning around it, I don't have clarity, but I don't know what it's pointing at. No.
One of my favorite things to do in a relationship workshop, like a couples
yeah.
workshop,
uh-huh.
is to and it can be any couple. I mean, it could be
yeah.
a parent, a child, but it has to be that kind of close relationship.
Okay.
And you get them to I get them. You don't. I do. I get them
okay.
to write down what yeah. is most important to the other person about them.
What is most important to the other
yeah,
person
so,
about... Oh, I see. Yes, good. Yeah, I got that. Good.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and so they, you know, they make their little list, and we go through a whole bunch of exercises like that. You know,
yeah.
What is the person's favorite, you know, just basic kinds of stuff. And
yeah.
then they compare the lists.
Oh.
And they realize they have no idea who that other person
double
is.
Reverse pre- ah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
So I think you want me to blah, blah.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
so I'm doing that to please you.
Yes.
But actually, in an honest conversation, we find out that it drives you crazy that I do that. I hate
oh.
it. And we can, even when relationships are close, you know, once we come to an awareness like that, we can
yeah.
actually get it that the other person has been trying to tell us that.
Yeah.
But we're so convinced. And why are we so convinced? Because it's so important to us. And it can
yeah.
be so it can be so important to me on the plus or the minus. So I'm going to take care of you the way I want to be taken care of. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to give you the, I mean, anybody who's been in an intimate relationship knows the nightmare of this. You know, I give you the presents
yeah.
that I want. You give me the presents that you want. We both
yeah.
hate the presents. And, you know,
yeah.
we would just be better off buying things for ourselves. But we can't because we have to buy them for each other because that's what a relationship is.
Yes. That's my experience. I'm married. So that's my experience.
Yeah.
you're preaching to the choir.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's my experience.
So that's
wow.
the double reverse. Projection. If I am super responsible, you know, being responsible
uh-huh.
is everything to me, then
yeah, would, yeah.
I'm going to believe that you are judging me about my level of responsibility
oh,
the way
brilliant.
I'm
yeah.
judging me.
Oh, I see.
And you can say, no, I don't care about that. That's not important to me. That's not an issue for me. But I won't
yeah.
believe you.
yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So there
Boy,
we are.
That is so prevalent in my experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because this,
yeah.
when I hit this double reverse projection, Sherry, it just stopped me in my tracks. Like, what is going on here? Because I'm doing it constantly.
Yes.
And there's so much suffering around it.
Yes. Yes, there is.
Yeah.
And that's a really good point. We have trouble seeing the kinds of processes that we are most locked into for maximum suffering.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I couldn't see the process.
Conditioning doesn't like us.
No. No. And when I tried to kind of just leave it alone and come back to it, then I thought, well, maybe I'll bring it up on the show. Well, conditioning just, it said, no, you can't, and excuses, and we can't call the show. And so that's why there was so much fear and resistance tonight, because I was looking at a process that it had me hogtied.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Indeedy do.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Well,
that
I'm
is
glad
great.
You called.
I'm so glad I called. I'll be in talking about deepening your practice. My conditioning has gone actually off the chart. I didn't think it was possible, but it's gone off the chart these last 2 weeks because I'm coming to the monastery for a month next week.
Uh-huh.
So yeah,
my
experience, Emily's experience, my experience. Yeah, Sherry, it has been rough, and for everybody, my poor wife, my poor son. They're going, "What's happened to Dad?"
Right.
Anyway, but I'm seeing through it, which is all part of the process. I'm having a workshop before the workshop, as they say.
Uh-huh.
And I'll look forward to seeing you in a week. And everybody at the monastery. Very excited.
I'm looking forward to it, too. Thanks,
Todd. Thanks again. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Good night.
All right, good night.
Thanks for joining us, Todd. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have about 3 minutes left, and we have two callers here.
Well, you got to pick one.
I'm going to pick one.
Okay. Because my sense is we will not get to both of them.
That's my sense, too. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Jessica in Mill Valley.
Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
How's life in Mill Valley?
Well, it's absolutely beautiful outside. Inside, my conditioning is
not
absolutely
so much.
Just freaking out that I'm on the call at all, and and especially how stupid am I for not hanging up since we only have 3 minutes.
Uh-huh.
So I, you know, Michael should have picked the other person because obviously I can't say anything meaningful in 3 minutes.
Uh-huh. So self-hate is having kind of a heyday, field day here, whatever that expression is, huh?
Yeah.
Having a good time with you right now.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and say something significant. What's going on?
Oh, man. I mean, my big issue right now is kind of trusting myself, or I'm not sure who's trusting who, really, but figuring that out, I guess.
Yeah, okay. Because that's the first big step, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Figuring that out. What exactly are we talking about here? So
right.
The issue is trust.
Yeah, I think that conditioning really trusted conditioning for a while, or it convinced me to trust it for a while.
Oh, yes.
Because my life was going just so incredibly perfectly, and I kind of was just like, wow, I somehow can't do anything wrong. And now I kind of obviously see that I can, or that I, you know, that there are things that will at least trigger conditioning to tell me that I'm doing something wrong. And
right, which is a really important distinction that you just made.
Right, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. So that probably tells me that conditioning is the one having trust issues.
Yes, yeah. Well, here's my projection, and then
okay. And
you can tell me if I might be on track.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at trust, which means you're looking at a deeper relationship of trust with yourself,
mm-hmm.
which means you're not trusting conditioning in the same way. Now,
mm-hmm.
I doubt you ever actually trusted conditioning. You know, because trust is different from the kind of blindly following conditioning that we do before we start to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you actually trusted it. It was just the only thing that was there. You know, before we start to wake up, we just think, well, that's just who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And so now that you're waking up, you're realizing that there's you and there's conditioning. And you're starting through a process of learning to trust yourself more.
Mm-hmm.
So that's naturally going to kick up a whole lot of resistance from conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yes.
Does that kind of feel like what's going on?
Yeah. It was just really confusing, I think, when my life was kind of like there was a several-year span where I felt like nothing bad could happen. And it was really convincing. And it was after I had, you know, learned, you know, come to retreats and learned some, you know, about conditioning. So I figured that there was probably some conditioning going on, but it was going so well that I just was kind of confused, I guess.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, maybe not. You know, what I'm hearing in that is you had a really good run there.
Yeah.
You know, everything was going your way. That's great. Mm-hmm. How good is that? You know, a lot of people will never be able to say that, or conditioning would never let them say that in their whole entire life.
Yeah.
So things really went well for you. Everything was easy. It all worked.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And
yeah,
now?
And the fact that it's not now isn't a problem.
That's right. It's just simply what's going on now.
Right.
It's not like you did anything wrong. It's not like mm-hmm. you should have been different in the past. It's not like, you know, conditioning would have you believe you should have been miserable through those years when everything was going well as some sort of preparation for where you are now.
Sure.
Which is completely bogus. So now things aren't as easy. Good. You get to develop a whole new set of muscles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, that feels kind of significant to me. How about you?
Well, I think we might have gone over 3 minutes, so I'm not sure.
Oh, only a few minutes, but really, who's counting?
Yeah. Well, thank
you so much. Call back again, would you, after conditioning has had a little talk with you about this?
Okay, I will.
And we'll take a next step. How about that?
Great. Perfect.
All right.
Thanks,
Jessica.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jessica. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, another great show.
Fun show. Thanks to everybody, huh?
Yes, lots of great callers, lots of many, many wonderful listeners.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
We do. Thank you, Sherry.
Talk to you next week, Michael.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.